Welcome, Crows! Good to see you're still listening in. I have some real special episodes, starting with this one, recounting the attempt of some runners to help me save DeForest's life from her CFD infection. Hope you dig it. The story's narrated by a chummer who goes by the name of Bifrost, who replied to the job listing. Now, he's an odd duck for sure, but he's alright, I guess. See you on the other side, Crows.
Hey Opti, I caught your broadcast about DeForest's struggle with CFD. I'm so very sorry to hear about this. I have little matrix expertise, but if you need magical or astral help, I'm there. I can also offer half an ounce, yes that's 8 drams, of orichalcum for either reagent or financial use. I offer this because children are our future, and they deserve our best efforts. Bifrost. I pressed send and hoped my message would at least offer Opti some comfort. Opti's broadcast asking for help to cure his adopted daughter, DeForest, of her CFD infection, pulled at my heartstrings more than a little, having been a father myself, even if it was a long time ago. Offering 400,000 New Yen worth of orichalcum should show my sincerity, or make him think I was a kook. That's a serious amount to most, and I should have considered that he might not have taken such an offer seriously. It isn't really that much to me, considering I've been making this stuff regularly for the last few years. I shrugged off the memories of a distant past and returned my focus to what I was doing. Fantasy and adventure film soundtracks from before the first crash played in the background. Appropriately, John Williams' epic space opera soundtracks were playing. Standing in my magical lodge slash workshop with the casing of my mana blade open, I carefully tuned the orichalcum circuitry and runes that controlled the complex Magitek device. I finally managed to get it working about 6 months ago. A message icon appeared at the edge of my vision. Calming my grin, I deactivated the blade and opened the message. It was Opti. He had replied fairly quickly. I wasn't sure he'd reply at all.
Bifrost, I don't know you, and that's one hell of an unbelievable offer. But you're the only one that's replied, and I'm running out of time. If you're serious, come to Samson's Noodles in Chicago's Noose, and we'll talk. If you're not serious, don't ever let me find you. Opti.
Well, I couldn't blame him for being skeptical. In my eagerness to be helpful, I had overplayed my hand. At least he was willing, or desperate enough, to meet. Really, if I were fighting for my kid's life, I would be too. I sent a message to my fixer, a well-connected human gent by the name of Charlie Nova, asking him to hook me up with a coyote to get me to Chicago, the sooner the better. My fake sin's top-notch, easily good enough to get me onto a flight without risk of burning the sin, but I didn't want the hassle of registering and checking all my foci. Charlie didn't take long to reply. He knew a rigger in Chicago, a technomancer calling herself Contrail, who would be up for the trip. She wouldn't be cheap, especially since she would be coming out to Denver to pick me up. 15,000 New Yen, plus Charlie's usual 10% finder's fee. That was fine by me. I sent him the payment, packed up my gear and a couple of chains of clothing in a duffel bag, clipped a mana blade to my belt, strapped on my concealable quick-draw holster with my Colt Manhunter pistol. I don't care much for guns, but they come in handy sometimes. Grabbed my trusty old holly staff, straightened my custom Mortimer of London Argentum duster, black of course, put on my gray wool driver's cap, secured my hidden underground lair under Castle Rock. What, you don't have a hidden underground lair? I hear they're all the rage these days. And headed out. I replied to Opti that I was on the way and should arrive in a few hours. I always loved going on an adventure. I just hoped I could do DeForest and Opti some good.
What? Are you sure?
Contrail raised an eyebrow at me in disbelief. I gathered it wasn't a normal request that I'd made. Absolutely, assuming it won't make things more difficult for you.
Without a parachute or anything?
Her tone seemed to indicate that she was pretty sure I'd taken leave of my senses. She's not wrong, just not in the manner she thought. I never claimed to be entirely sane, but this was child's play. Yep, don't need one. I solved that problem a long time ago.
Huh. Okay then.
She shrugged, dismissing my insane request.
You've already paid me, and this actually makes getting you in easier, so whatever. You'll make a hell of an entrance or a hell of a mess, if anyone sees you.
No one will see me, though I admit it'd be fun if they did. I grinned, enjoying the thrill of what I was about to do.
Right. Well, we're just about over your destination. If you survive, keep my comm code. I like that you don't haggle over price, so try not to die.
No worries on that score, Contrail. Thanks for the ride. I quickly tucked my driver's hat into an inside pocket of my duster. Didn't want to lose that.
Sure. My pleasure.
The side door of her Ares Venture VTOL slid open. The sudden rush of air whipping through the aircraft pushed me back a step.
Ready when you are.
Her voice came over the internal speakers now, else the wind would have drowned out her voice. I grinned and gave her a thumbs up as I stepped out of the aircraft into the night sky. The wind was exhilarating as it caught in my duster, whipping the tail of the coat around behind me. Below me, Chicago was laid out in all her dystopian glory. I was falling toward the noose. According to the GPS AR window I had open, I was about 20 meters west of my target, Samson's Noodles. Right on target. Seeing the dark pit of the Kermack crater in person for the first time gave me a shiver, even though it was shrouded in the darkness of night. I wasn't even perceiving the astral, and I could feel the inherent rawness of the crater and the area surrounding it from up here. As I approached the buildings of East Illinois Street, I pulled up my Quick and Levitate spell, letting the magic slow me to a non-terminal velocity. The night was overcast, but I cast an improved invisibility spell just in case. No need to announce my arrival in a dramatic fashion, much as I might have otherwise enjoyed doing so. I settled gently into the alleyway next to Samson's Noodles. I put my hat back on, then sent a text message to Contrail. Landed safe, thanks again. She replied quickly with a thumbs-up emoji, definitely keeping her comm code. Dropping the invisibility since no one was near enough to notice me anyway, I walked out of the alley and approached Samson's Noodles, my staff clacking on the cracked sidewalk. The brick building had seen better days, but it was in better shape than I expected, given that it was in Chicago's noose. It appeared that someone cared about this neighborhood. Peeking into the astral, I winced at the general pain and darkness that suffused most of the noose, but not in an appreciation at seeing that the neighborhood around Samson's Noodles wasn't nearly as bad off as the surrounding area. A lot of effort had gone into making things better here. That was encouraging. I stepped into the restaurant and was immediately assaulted by the delicious smell of Thai food. The low hum of conversation coming from the half-full dining room added to the comfortable ambiance. Scanning the crowd, I spotted a man in a bowler hat sitting towards the back, away from the other patrons. He appeared to be studying something that sat on the table in front of him. As I approached, I saw that he was writing in a notebook, actual paper. Not many bother with that these days. Nice to see some folks still appreciate office products. I caught enough of what he was writing to see that he was preparing the script for his next broadcast. Politely, I stopped looking at the notebook and studied the man I was here to meet. Opti's trademark mustache was truly impressive. Even more impressive was his aura, strong magic ability, initiated, and a keen mind. But worry dominated his emotions, tinged with anger, with a small spot of hope waiting to grow. And there was no doubt he was a raven shaman. A large crow appeared on his shoulder from nowhere, cocked its head at me, and cawed before disappearing. Opti looked up at me suddenly, as if slightly startled to find me standing there. I smiled slightly as I nodded in greeting, my vision returning to normal.
Can I help you? I'm expecting... Wait.
Opti's voice sounded just like it did in his broadcasts, minus the modulation from being recorded and transmitted over the Matrix, of course. He looked me over, his gaze growing more intense as he sensed me, taking in my staff and pendant. He saw what I wanted him to see, at least for now. It's too risky to wander the world without keeping my aura at least partially masked, and my quickened spells and mana blade hidden.
You're Bifrost?
His tone made it clear that he wasn't impressed with what he saw. Yes, sir, I'm Bifrost. Pleasure to meet you, Opti. I smiled and reached out to shake hands. Opti raised an eyebrow at me and pointed at the seat across from him. I took off my hat and tucked it back into my duster pocket, then sat. My staff remained standing. Opti looked at it, then back to me, still unimpressed with my theatrics. I smiled in a friendly fashion.
All right, Bifrost. Since I didn't see you casting magic fingers, it's apparent you have it quickened, even though I didn't see any quickened spells in your aura, which tells me you're hiding at least some of your abilities. Smart in most cases, but not when you're trying to get in on my good side if that bulljack story about having half an ounce of orc alchem to...
Opti paused as I placed a small, copper-colored metal disc on the table and pushed it over to him. It resembled a large coin, about 20 millimeters across, but with no stamping or markings on it at all. Opti looked at the coin, back up at me, then picked it up and examined it more closely.
This is...
He looked at me again, eyebrows raised in disbelief. Half an ounce of auric alcum, yes.
That's no small amount of auric alcum. Why are you so ready and willing to give me a small fortune when you don't know me and have no stake in my troubles?
I paused, letting my awareness slip into astral perception. I had long ago learned to divorce the orientation of my physical head from my astral senses, so looking around me without being obvious was easy. No one in the restaurant seemed to be taking an undue interest in our conversation, so I returned my awareness to the physical world. Paranoid? Maybe. But it's a reasonable precaution. Lowering my voice just in case, I replied. I made it. I've been making orichalcum regularly the past few years. It's my main source of income, and I've accumulated a sizable stockpile because I don't want to flood the market and drop prices. So to me, half an ounce of orichalcum is a small price to help someone in dire need. I give it to you willingly in the hopes it will help your daughter, with no expectation of anything in return. Opti blinked.
I've never heard of any single person who's able to make that much orichalcum and being willing to give it away. It's too expensive and time-consuming. Even corporate manufacturers keep several alchemists working tirelessly in labs to make large quantities. How do you make so much that you can afford to give it away? Wait. While I'm curious, that's not what's important right now. I appreciate your generosity, but I can't accept that rich of a gift. Not from someone I don't know. It'd put me in too much debt to you. And I don't say I wouldn't owe you anything. I just see it on your face that you're thinking it. I would owe you, because that's who I am.
Opti slid the orichalcum coin back toward me. I nodded. Fair enough. Honestly, I'd feel the same, so I understand. I picked the coin up and slid it back into my pocket. However, it remains available to you in whatever manner or portion you might require to help DeForest. Just let me know, and it's yours. Opti scrutinized me.
Politely persistent, exceedingly generous, and a hidden magical ability. You're an enigma, Bifrost, especially for a Shadowrunner.
Yes, that's true. Thankfully, though, I'm not obsessed with question marks. I quipped, not expecting him to catch the joke. Indeed, his face screwed up in confusion.
Question marks? What do you... Oh.
His face lit up in understanding, and I raised my eyebrows in surprise.
That's a good one. I almost didn't get it.
He smiled slightly.
But seriously, how are you intending to help, besides providing finances? While I skeptically appreciate your generosity, I have funding enough to do this on my own, or I wouldn't have put out the call for runners.
Well, you said in your broadcast that tracking down this Dodger fellow in Rinraku's personnel database was a good place to start. The fact that he owes you is a bonus. I'm no hacker, but I'm a decent investigator. I could try to track him down. I paused, remembering something I'd read on a Denver Shadowrunner forum a while back. Wait, is this the same Dodger that was rumored to have been connected with one of the AIs involved in the Rinraku arcology fiasco?
Yeah, why? Is that a problem?
Opti narrowed his eyes slightly. No, not at all. Just making connections. I shook my head as I spoke. I can't imagine he'd willingly work for Rinraku, or why he'd be in their personnel files. Oh, as a target or other person of interest, not as an asset or employee. Okay, that makes sense now. Given his place in history, I wonder what information about him might be posted on Jackpoint. I've never had access to it myself, of course, but I've heard it's a veritable treasure trove of data. I quirked an eyebrow in idle curiosity.
Huh. Good question. Lucky for you, I have access to Jackpoint. Let me see what I can find.
Opti pulled up a private AR screen, or at least I assumed he did, based on the familiar gestures he began making in midair. I waited patiently while he searched. I already had respect for Opti before meeting him. His neo-anarchist broadcast reached a wide audience and made his dedication to truth and free information abundantly clear. He cared about people, helped where he could, and took risks to do what he thought was right. My respect for him had only grown in the last several minutes. Despite his understandable skepticism and stress regarding his daughter's health, he pursued his goal relentlessly. I've gotten pretty good at reading people over the years. I've had to, given the secrets I keep. As far as I could tell, Opti's a good man. Someone I could maybe call friend. Gods know I need more folk I can trust. We'll see how it goes.
What do you know? Stormfront upload from about 5 years ago has an article about Dodger in it. Looks like God convinced him to do some work for him, probably by telling him they could help him find the AI he'd fallen in love with. I think Magera was her name. There's also speculation that Dodger's a technomancer now. Oh, and even better, Bull knows him.
I couldn't help but grin. Bull? The best orc decker you never met?
Ha! The one and only. I'm sending him a private message now, asking what it'll cost to either pass a message on to Dodger or slip us the contact info.
Shiny. I didn't know Bull was involved with Jackpoint, though I shouldn't really be surprised. Opti quirked an eyebrow.
Involved? He's one of the three sysadmins, along with Glitch and Slammo. He's probably the most level-headed of the three, to be honest. Glitch is logical and dependable, but often cranky, and Slammo is almost always goofing around about something, but he's good at what he does. All three are Deckers, as you might guess. Oh, and I should tell you, I did some research on you after you contacted me. You have some interesting data floating around about you on some various Shadowrunner sites. Your rep's pretty solid from what I found. Dependable, honest, powerful hermetic chaos mage, serving either Odin or Wise Warrior, depending on who you ask, and you don't kill unless you have to, and sometimes not even then. One runner even called you compassionate, though I'm not sure he phrased it as a compliment. Unsurprisingly, I didn't find anything about your past, nothing before you came on the runner scene in Denver about 5 years ago. I won't pry, every runner has their secrets. But one thing I am curious about, though, is this occult investigation group you're a part of, the Servitors of Weird. Ugh, hold on, I just got a response from Bull. We'll come back to this later, I'm still curious.
Sure thing, Opti. I'm happy to tell you more about the Weird whenever we get back to it. What'd Bull say?
Huh. Turns out he hasn't spoken with Dodger in years, but he did send a message asking if he could share Dodger's contact info with us in regards to a job. The response he got was to meet at a host called Dawkins Corner in an hour. He recommends caution. Suspects that the last response he got was automated and Dodger's known to be tricky and ruthless. But it's the best lead we have. You feel like you want to chance it?
I shrugged. Well, I've come this far. I have no real chance against the Decker on his own turf, so I'll have to rely on my wits and trust that dropping your name will be enough to get his attention, assuming it's actually Dodger on the other end. As long as I don't get link-locked and swarmed with black ice, I should be okay. Of course, I prefer to not dive into the Matrix in the middle of the restaurant. Is there somewhere safe I can go? Opti considered this for a moment, then looked over to one of the people working in the restaurant. Catching the middle-aged Asian man's attention, he gestured slightly toward the back of the building. The Asian nodded and rubbed his index and middle fingers with his thumb. Opti nodded.
Yeah, there's a back room here we can use. There's a small fee, but I'll cover it for now. Let's go.
Opti stood up, tucking his notebook under his arm and headed into the back. I followed, taking note of the exit as we passed it, just in case. I trusted Opti so far, but one can never be too careful. The room he led me to was mainly used for storage, but a table with 6 chairs was set up in the back. There was almost no noise from the restaurant, and even that faded when Opti closed the door.
Alright, have a seat. Wireless here isn't great, but it's about as good as you're going to get in the noose. It's going to be a bit laggy, but you should be able to get in the Matrix fine. I'll keep an eye on your meat body.
Thanks, I appreciate that. I have a receiver plugged into my comlink, so that'll help. I slid into one of the chairs with my back to the wall. Opti took a seat opposite me. Well, here goes nothing. Wish me luck. Opti nodded as I slid my trodes onto my head and activated my comlink's VR mode. My vision blurred into digital lines of color and code as a virtual reality of the Matrix overrode my physical senses.
Well, there you go, Crows. If you want to find out the rest of the story, you gotta tune in. We'll be back next time with more adventures with Opti and Bifrost to try to save DeForest. Thanks for listening, Crows.